The first thing I noticed was how quiet the floor went. Not the normal office quiet where keyboards hum and phones vibrate softly, but the kind of silence that announces something is wrong before anyone says a word. I looked up from my screen and saw her standing there, just past the reception desk, coat still on, handbag clutched like she'd walked in with purpose and no intention of leaving calmly. She wasn't lost. She wasn't asking for directions. Her eyes were already locked on me. I remember thinking, absurdly, that she looked tired. Not angry yet, just depleted. Like someone who hadn't slept enough since learning something she couldn't unlearn. I didn't know how she'd found the emails. I only knew that she had, and that whatever version of the story I'd been telling myself was about to collapse in front of everyone I worked with. She didn't raise her voice when she said my name. She didn't have to. Heads turned anyway. Chairs stopped rolling. Someone's coffee mug froze halfway to their mouth. She said my name again, slower this time, and asked if we could talk. We didn't. I'd been at the firm just under 2 years when he became my direct supervisor. Same department, same floor, different reporting line. He was competent in a way that inspired trust quickly. Not charming exactly, not smooth, but steady. The kind of man people described as reliable. Married. Everyone knew that. He talked about his wife in small, consistent ways, which somehow made it feel less risky when our conversations stretched past what they should have. We were all Welsh, all roughly from the same part of the country, which gave the office an intimacy that blurred professional lines early. There was shared shorthand, shared references, a sense that we all knew where we came from, even if we were dressed differently now. At first, he was simply attentive. He noticed when I stayed late. He noticed when I carried more than my share of a project. He noticed when others didn't pull their weight and said so quietly to me. It felt good to be seen in a way that wasn't flashy. It felt earned. The emails started innocently, work-related, clarifications, follow-ups, then opinions, then jokes. He had a dry humor that worked better one-on-one than in meetings. I responded in kind. I told myself that was professionalism too. Rapport, team cohesion, all the words people use when they don't want to interrogate a feeling yet. The first warning sign was how often he framed things as just between us. Not secret, exactly, just contained, efficient. He trusted me, he said. He could talk to me. I was level-headed. I didn't make things awkward. I heard the compliment and ignored the implication. The second warning sign was how often the emails arrived outside office hours. Nothing explicit. Nothing I couldn't justify if someone glanced at them. But personal in tone, curious. A little too interested in how my evenings were going, how I unwound, whether I found it easy to switch off. I didn't shut it down. I didn't escalate it either. I hovered in that space where nothing has been acknowledged, but everything has been permitted. When he mentioned his wife, it was never in anger. It was in resignation. She didn't understand his job. She worried too much. She read into things. I told myself I was listening, not aligning, that I was being supportive, not substitutive. We never touched. That became the internal justification I leaned on hardest. No physical line crossed. Just words. Just connection. Just emails that stayed in inboxes and outboxes and never crossed my mind as evidence. Looking back, the most telling sign wasn't what he said. It was how quickly he replied when I did. How available he always was to me. How unavailable he became to others once I was looped in. By the time I sensed something had shifted, it already felt established. Undoing it would have required naming it. And naming it would have required admitting that I'd known all along something wasn't right. So I kept going, quietly, carefully, foolishly. The day she came into the office wasn't dramatic in the way people expect confrontation to be. There was no screaming, no crying, no thrown objects. That almost made it worse. She walked past reception like someone who'd been there before, even though she hadn't. She didn't look at him first. She looked at me. And in that moment, I understood something I hadn't allowed myself to consider before. She wasn't there for him. She stopped beside my desk and said my name again, this time with recognition, familiarity, the kind that comes from reading someone's words over and over until you know their cadence. I stood up because sitting felt wrong, because everyone was watching, because my body moved before my mind caught up. She asked if I recognized her. I said yes, because lying felt pointless. She nodded once, as if that confirmed something she already knew. Then she asked how long it had been going on. I opened my mouth and realized I didn't have an answer that would make me look innocent or honest, so I didn't answer at all. That was when she turned finally and looked at him. He'd come out of his office by then, face already pale, already defensive. He said her name sharply, like she was the one out of line. She didn't raise her voice. She told him she'd found the emails. All of them. The deleted ones, too. She said she'd printed them. Printed. The word landed hard. Physical. Permanent. She didn't say what they contained. She didn't need to. Everyone understood the shape of what she meant. Then she looked back at me and asked if I thought it was appropriate to conduct myself that way with a married man who had authority over my role. That was the question that did it. Not because it was unfair, but because it framed the entire situation in a way I hadn't prepared for. I said I hadn't meant for it to happen. A useless sentence. One people say when they've participated fully in something, they wish had a different ending. She told me intention didn't erase impact. She told me she'd trusted the workplace to have boundaries if her marriage couldn't protect itself. She told me she'd be speaking to HR, and then she left. The silence afterward was heavier than the confrontation itself. No one spoke. No one moved. Someone eventually cleared their throat, like that could reset the room. He didn't look at me. He went back into his office and closed the door. Within the hour, I had an email from HR asking me to come down for a conversation. Neutral language, concerned tone, no accusations yet, just management. By the end of the day, the story circulating wasn't that a supervisor had crossed a line. It was that a situation had occurred and needed to be handled carefully to minimize disruption. Disruption to what became the unspoken question, HR framed it as a complexity issue. They acknowledged the power imbalance, but spoke about mutual participation. They asked me how I thought things had escalated and whether I recognized my role in maintaining professional boundaries. They used words like perception and optics and risk. When I asked what steps were being taken regarding him, they told me that was being addressed separately, confidentially, appropriately. What they did ask me about was my emotional state, whether I felt able to continue working on the floor, whether I thought mediation might help, whether I understood the importance of maintaining a respectful workplace environment going forward. I was offered support in the form of monitoring, a change in reporting line temporarily, a reminder about policies I already knew. He remained in his role. The wife never returned to the office. I don't know what happened between them. I only know that her presence lingered longer than his apology ever did. He sent me one, eventually, brief, regretful, carefully worded, focused on the damage caused rather than the behavior itself. People stopped, including me, in casual conversations, not overtly, just enough to notice. A distance settled in, as if proximity to me carried risk. HR checked in periodically, always with the same question, "How are you managing?" I learned then what that word really meant. Not how are you feeling, not are you okay, but are you being quiet, are you compliant, are you still functional? The residue of it stayed with me longer than the incident itself. The awareness that accountability doesn't always travel upward, that public humiliation doesn't guarantee private consequence, that being the visible woman in a private situation often makes you the easiest variable to adjust. Sometimes I replay the moment she said my name, not with anger, with clarity, because in that moment, stripped of rationalizations and hierarchy, I was seen exactly as I was, a participant. A professional, a woman navigating power badly. And somehow, still the one they wanted to manage.